follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Busy hour coming up as we're live in Vegas, Circuit Resort and Casino. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard. We're going to go inside our pizzeria with your long shot bets coming up in 45 minutes. Some good sound, strong sound, by the way, on dark horses in college football and a quarterback battle that evidently is not even close. Pauly, we were just talking about this with Paul Charchi and, you know, what to do with the Jordan Tyson injury with the Saints. And Charch said, you know, Juwan Johnson had a monster year last year. He's going to get a ton of targets. He was third overall in receiving yards by a tight end in the entire league a year ago. So I said, well, Caesars has 30-1. They offer that market. Well, thanks to Mark, he hit me up on Instagram, Mitch Moss there. FanDuel has Juwan Johnson 75-1. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
That is absolutely great. Worth plunking some change down on.
Yeah, that's excellent. And a good observation he made as well. He also said off air, the best time to do your draft, if you can, because all these injuries and with the news, is right around Labor Day weekend. And that's coming from a Hall of Famer. So I think that makes sense as well. How many are you going to do?
I'm cutting back.
Are you? Okay.
I'm cutting back for various reasons. But I'll probably still be in four or five, I think. And all of mine are basically the week of, you know, Labor Day or week one of the NFL. I do know that, you know, the hardcore nuts, and I say that in a complimentary way, they like to draft a lot like in July and early August because they like to get ahead of these moves with the average draft positions and everything like that. I'm not in enough leagues. I mean, I was before, but I'm not going to be this year. I want the news of who's going to be healthy and who's not going to be healthy. So I like waiting until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to draft, and then all of a sudden I have four guys on the same team that are just, they're going to be gone for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, God. Going back in time, there was Michael Vick, Jamal Anderson. You had the Emmitt Smith holdout.
Mm-hmm.
There was just one after a number where there were big injuries happening in camp or in the preseason. That was devastating for fantasy during that stretch.
And you retired playing.
Everything. I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got sick of it.
Do you miss it at all?
No.
No, you don't?
No. Not with the player props and what's going on with sports betting everywhere now, too.
It's
changed things.
I still enjoy it to the point of where I have to play because I do get that much excitement out of it. But I will tell you that the randomness makes it a little, I don't like it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I bring this up, I think, every single year. True story. Good friend of mine was in a league many, many years ago. He did not even draft his team. It was an auto-draft team. And he forgot that he was actually in the league. He got a call the week of the championship, so late in the year.
Oh.
Hey, you're in the title game. He's like, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, we did this draft back in whatever. It was July. He's like, you weren't there for it at auto-draft, and you made the title game. He's like, what? Are you kidding me? Now, that's one example of 100 million leagues or whatever, but that's the kind of craziness that can happen in fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
And it kills me. And the injuries bother me, you know, because if you want to go in big and play for high stakes sometimes, it's like I've had that idea and I play for a decent amount, but the idea of really going like high stakes, I know it's going to happen. I think I'm going to have, because I'm pretty confident that I can get a team in the playoffs, like no matter where I'm going to be drafting. But when I have the three injuries that are coming at some point, it drives me nuts. And then the stink bombs that come out of nowhere. There was a year when I was, I had the best team I've ever assembled. It was 14-0, undefeated going to the title week. And I was playing a guy that barely snuck into the playoffs, and he had a horrible draft. And credit to him, he put together a team with the waiver wire every single week. And he beat me because Philip Lindsay, I believe, for the Broncos, did nothing on that Monday night game against the Raiders.
Oh.
And that's how I lost by like 4 or 5 points.
Yeah.
So I went from having the one and only time I can ever say that I would have been undefeated in fantasy football to losing in the title game at 14-1. No joke. It was after an ankle surgery that I had, but I wasn't feeling so hot like that night. And I said, Lorraine, we might want to go to the quick care real quick. Had the blood pressure checked. It was like 168 over 130. I'm like, yeah, I need to dial it back a little bit here. I'm cussing. I'm throwing things at the house. Like, this is completely unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah, right. So this isn't a fantasy aspect, but I really like what the Colts did trying to pick up Keenan Allen, who's a nice security blanket, get open on third down. And I think that's a nice acquisition that they made. I'm surprised the guy was available, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good pickup as well.
Okay, this is going to be a lot of fun. Tales from Las Vegas, a longtime bookmaker here in this city. Robert Walker joins the program. He's on the Progressive guest line. Hey, Robert, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well. Yeah, yeah. How did your, what was your first day like in your career here, bookmaking?
My first day?
Yeah, didn't something crazy happen?
Unfortunately, everywhere I went, my first day working as a ticket writer for the Fremont and the Boyd Gaming was, I think it was 1986, I was robbed of $11,000. And I finished my shift and then they suspended me shortly thereafter because they didn't know if I was involved or not. So it was my first chance to take a lie detector test. So that was good times.
Oh, my God. Wow. So you have to prove your innocence. That they get an inside job?
They didn't know, right? Because they just thought nobody could be that stupid, right? But what saved me was it was my first day on the job, and I probably shouldn't have been writing tickets at that point. So that's really the only thing that saved me. So I remember telling them that, hey, if this is going to cost me the ability to move up, then just fire me now. That was the talk of a 25-year-old. I wouldn't have said that today.
Wow.
That's aggressive.
So what, it's your first day, you're writing tickets, guy comes up gunpoint? He says, give me what you got in the
I
tail.
Wish.
How'd it work? No, okay.
Yeah, I wish it was gunpoint because that would be more dramatic. No, he asked me a series of questions about Reg 6A back then. When do we have to fill out the logs? When did we have... So at some point I turned around and walked down the aisle to talk to our supervisor, who at that point was Kenny White, and Jeff Garrett was the manager. And he just reached over the counter, stole the hundreds, and then took off. I actually took off after him, but then I remembered I still had money in there. So, so that was that. And they caught the guy. I mean, so eventually they caught the guy. It was pretty. I guess it's one way that everybody in the company knew who I was right off the bat, which was the upside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. How about this? Before we get to the story that's never been told before at the Stardust in 1992, Bite Night. And if you can set up the first Tyson Holyfield fight when you were at the Mirage for 12 years and also at the Stardust and a bookmaker for over two decades. You're telling me Tyson gets out of prison and he's going against Holyfield, but Holyfield was such a big dog that he won and knocked him out in the 11th round. You guys got killed on that fight?
Yeah, so that's when I got to the Mirage in October of 96, and that fight I think was in November of 96. And the damage had been done. We were taking plus 12 to 1, 15 to 1 on Holyfield before I got there, which is not to say that I didn't make matters worse, right, when I got there, because it was such a poorly booked event that we were basically going to break even or lose. What we did was $1.4 million.
Holyfield was that big of a dog in the fight?
Can you explain that? Because he at that time, he had lost, I think, three of his last six fights. But still, it's a guy who'd only had one fight out of prison. It shows you the Tyson hype, though.
Yeah, so I think it was that, and also the fact that Holyfield, I think he was 3-3 in his last six fights. He had some actual medical conditions, too, or problems as well. So, but when I got to the Mirage, I think we were about 15-1, and the money that we were able to finally take back on Tyson was at 7-8-1, but that was just people arbitraging, right? They had taken the probably 12-13-1. So you couldn't take it all back at 8-1 when it was just a bad position. And we were just actually at the very end, we were just rooting it for it to go the distance because Holyfield by knockout was our worst case scenario. And of course that's what happened.
Yeah. Well,
how did you adjust and then plan for the second fight in June of 1997?
I can't remember what we opened him at, but obviously it was a much lower. I want to say somewhere in that 3-4 range, but I don't remember. Tyson was still a pretty decent favorite. And I remember that fight specifically because I was on the phone narrating it to our president back then, Bobby Baldwin. And I remember saying, I think he bit him. I wasn't sure because I couldn't tell from the first look. But that fight we did just so much better. We only lost $300,000 on that fight. So
way better.
That was, yeah. And so here's the funny part is we were not linked up to the MGM Grand at that time. And that's where the first fight was at, I believe. And had we been at the MGM Grand, I don't think I would have made it out of that because we lost $1.4 million. I'm sure the MGM Grand just got annihilated on top of that. So it was ugly all the way around.
Yeah. Probably not a good feeling when you were watching either one of those unfold, by the way. Like, Tyson's in trouble in both of them.
Yeah. No, it was as bad as it could get, that first fight. The second fight, you know, like I said, we it was just a little bit better because we weren't as lopsided on it, but it still was bad. Most of the time, when the fight's in Vegas, we need the favorite to win. I mean, yeah. That's – or if it's a big fight. Otherwise, we need the dog to win when it's not. So
I'm sorry to cut you off, Robert. Who's the comparison in recent years? To Paulie's point, the hype on Tyson, my God, that number's insane. It'd be Tiger, right? Like, coming back, books could post him 50-1 in any of these, they'll take action on him.
Yeah, I don't know that. That was definitely at the heyday of boxing. I don't know. And the other thing about boxing, because it's such an event, especially when it's in Nevada, that you take a lot more money on it than you normally would. It's kind of every big heavyweight match like that is similar to a Super Bowl, where you'll take a lot larger wagers than you normally do. People will bet a lot more than they normally do. And it was, like I said, it was just ugly. If I could go back in time, I definitely would have opened it a lot lower.
I guess more recent days it'd be McGregor, right?
Yeah. What a story. Tyson was 45-1. Holyfield was 32-3 entering the first fight. And Holyfield stopped him in the 11th round.
Hang tight. More with longtime Las Vegas odds maker Robert Walker coming up next to tell you a story about taking $4.6 million on the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl, and yet they won. And I can't wait to hear this story about a guy that he thinks might be buried at Lake Mead. That's coming up next. From Las Vegas, as we continue, longtime Las Vegas bookmaker Robert Walker on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, so can you tell the audience who Bill Brennan is and what he did when you were at the Stardust all the way back in 1992?
Yeah, so Bill Brennan was our main cashier, I should say, and he was the closing cashier. Back then, I don't know that people recall, but we didn't have all the writers could cash, right? So it was really you would bet sports or you bet race, then you'd go to a separate cashier that would basically hold all the money, and they would be the ones that cash. So what Bill Brennan did was he just was being a nice guy that day and told all the other cashiers. The procedure was the cashiers transfer the money to the main cage, right, to the casino cage. And he said, "I'll take it. Don't worry. You can get out of here faster. You don't have to wait for surveillance or security." So basically, he just got all the money and he absconded with it. At the end of the night, he just took it. It was $507,000, and he just took off with it. So without us, unbeknownst to us, even though we had procedures in place.
So he was – sorry, he's never been told before, and it goes back to one of the biggest heist jobs in Las Vegas history. He had recently been demoted and was also testing security. If you get some of the clues that were there prior, how was he testing security before this?
Yeah, so I guess over a period of months, he would make signs. I heard he even mooned them once. And he was looking to see if they acknowledged him in any way, right? So maybe he would flip them off or, do something where he wouldn't get in a lot of trouble. I guess he would get in trouble if he mooned him. But so just to see if they acknowledged that, hey, we saw you doing that or whatever. So eventually he was pretty confident that that surveillance wasn't watching him on that camera, even though he had, so much money on him. So he had got demoted. He was a supervisor, and I don't know the reason he got demoted. It was before I got there. I got there the year before.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure, but like I said, he was one of the nicest guys that you could work with. Always, I'm going to say always went the extra yard to help everybody else, which is one of the reasons why he got us that night. And what really happened there was the way it works is at the end of the night, the supervisor counts you down, calls security, waits for security to come get you, in a locked box and they take you to the cashier's cage. But in this case, Bill did the same thing. He told the supervisor, don't worry, I'll go get it. We had a library, handicapper's library at the Stardust back then where we'd put up sheets of stats and scores and whatnot before the internet, basically. And so about an hour later, it was either security called the supervisor or the supervisor went to see what was going on. And that's when he called me and said the cashier had took the money. I didn't understand what he was saying. This is before really cell phones and everything else. And he said he took $300,000. So I said, okay, I'm heading down there. And then he said, called me back about 10 minutes later and said, it's over $500,000. And I said, thank God, I didn't want to come down there for $300,000. So it was just a really, really ugly night. And then of course, he was on the FBI's most wanted for a long time. I think they just took him off in 2007, 2008. But they've never come close to finding out who he was. I will say this though, we didn't lose $507,000 because a lot of that was in chips, which are verifiable winnings. So it's probably closer to 300,000. I don't know the exact figure, but it was okay. Still ugly though.
So that's incredible. So he he wasn't able to redeem the chips then. So it's 1992, but he's trying to walk away with about $250,000. And they went to his apartment. He was gone, cleaned out. His cat was gone. And they found literature and stuff saying how to change your identity and such.
Yeah, but that's just, I think you just said it. That's just not enough money to last you very long when you're on the run like that. My guess is he probably sold the chips to somebody else for 10 cents on the dollar, 20 okay. cents on the dollar. And then my guess is that person said, I'll just keep all the money. Now, obviously, I have no idea what happened, but it's not enough money. It feels like he would have turned up somehow, some way. He wasn't an old man or by any stretch. So I think that we would have heard something. But, like I said, he had some friends that were, you know, obviously you find all this out after the fact, right? After the fact, it seems pretty easy to know this could have happened. Before the fact, but, you know, maybe he's hung around some unsavory characters or shadowy characters, I should say. But, we know as much as you do. We know nothing as of today.
So nobody ever heard from him again? I mean, what would be your best guess as to what ultimately happened to him? Is he still alive?
I think we're going to find out as Lake Mead keeps going down and down and down. That's my guess, is he's somewhere at the bottom of Lake Mead, which is getting less every day. So I it's hard to say, but I think he disappeared somewhere. I mean, I don't think he survived. One of the things that's funny is when you go to Wikipedia or whatever, it said he's the only person that survived or was successful in this kind of heist.
Right.
I doubt he was successful.
Yeah, yeah. Other people agree with you, too, that probably the person he was doing this with whacked him and took the whole thing himself, what you mentioned earlier as well. The first Patriot-Rams Super Bowl, $4.6 million on Rams money line. How long was there a back and forth? Should we take it? Are we gonna? What would you decide to do with that? And how it turned out, obviously.
Yeah, so I took the first, I think, $1.5 million on the money line, and then he said he wanted more. He was kind of hee-hawing going back and forth, saying, "I think I want to get more." So I called the person that I answered to at the MGM Mirage, which was Bill Macbeth, and Bill came down, talked to him for a while, and he bet it twice more. But it's funny because he didn't bet it all at once, right? He bet it. Then he'd look at it, come back and say, because it seemed like easy money to him. You know, it was like a CD or something. So, but we ended up taking $4.6 million and probably at three different tranches, basically. And then we took a lot back because you know how the Super Bowl works is all the $10 play is on the underdog to win outright. Right. So we were able to take as much back as we want. And that's one of the, that the state won $3 million that year and we won $3.3 million. So we won all the money that year. And we were in a position where we couldn't lose, which is I've never been in before. I've been in lose-lose situations like the Tyson fight, but I've never been in a situation where we couldn't lose. It was just a matter of how much. So that was a great game. But like I think I've always said, I should have quit afterwards because it's been all downhill since then.
25 years ago. I'm not asking for names, obviously. We would never do that. But was it a recognizable name? Was it a person that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very recognizable name. I've never said his name. I feel like it's his story to tell. I will say, though, he got me the next year. You know, I never give anybody a better number or a better line or it's just not, I just don't do it. You know, whatever's up on the board is what is what you get. But because he had lost so much the previous year, I had opened Tampa Bay a really the lowest out there against the Raiders. It was either the next year or the year after that. So I had opened the lowest number anywhere. So we were big Tampa Bay. We were on the Tampa Bay side, and he wanted Tampa Bay. And so I let him have a nickel, and he bet, I think he bet 350,000 or something like that on the point spread. Not the money line, obviously. Okay. And so we end up, it was a really weird game where we didn't, we just made a little bit of money on it, but I still lament that $350,000 bet because, you know, if I hadn't given that nickel, he wouldn't have taken it. But I felt some obligation because of the previous year. So it still bothers me to this day that I gave him that extra nickel.
Actually, could I guess the name? I'm not going to live on the air, but do you think if you gave me one guess, do you think I could get who it was?
Go ahead.
I would say Charles Barkley.
No, he had the other side.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
He said Barkley. Barkley had the other side, I thought.
No, so Barkley mostly bet the – this was at the Mirage specifically, even though we ran the Mandalay Bay back then. But I think Barkley was mostly – played at the Mandalay Bay and maybe at the MGM Grand.
Right.
I don't
think
Barkley ever played physically, even though all the bets came into the Mirage. I don't think he ever physically played. So, but that's a good guess. That's not him. This person has more money. This person losing $4.5 million would be like me losing $20.
I think it's Icon. Icon. No?
You're in the ballpark.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. Okay. Excellent job. All good right. to catch up with you. You've had an incredible career. Thanks for taking out a few minutes and sharing the Brennan story.
Oh, anytime, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank
all the
you.
Bad memories.
Thank you. Yeah, no kidding.
Thanks, Robert.
That is, and what it led to afterwards at the Stardust, where how can an employee walk out the side door with $500,000 in chips and cash?
I know.
And that's unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I knew Barkley was at the Mandalay Bay. Did he want?
That's the Bogdanovich story.
No, I know that.
He had Patriot money line. Yeah.
I thought, okay, I mixed it up. I thought that he wanted Rams big on the money line there. Okay. We'll rehash that, and you're going to hear one college football pundit's dark horses for the upcoming season. This is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Man, great stories from longtime Las Vegas odds maker, bookmaker, Robert Walker, and your reaction coming in fast and furious right now on X, emails as well, on X at VSiN Live and Mitch Moss Radio at Paulie Howard. One tweet says, what a great guest, all caps. That was awesome. Love the stories. If you missed it, he was on for about 1.5 segments. A little bit of an issue there at the very beginning of this hour, but you can always go back and listen to the Follow the Money podcast a little bit later on. So I threw out Barkley. I forgot that he was maybe, I knew the Bogdanovich story, obviously, at Mandalay Bay, but I thought he was also on, I thought he was on Rams.
No, he had $500,000 on Patriots.
Patriots, okay, all right, so yeah. I got that mixed up. My second guess, and you said Icon, and he said Robert Walker's response was what again?
Ballpark,
you're
close.
In the ballpark.
Close.
How about Kerry Packer?
Could have been.
Australian billionaire, media tycoon.
Oh, man.
Legendary high roller here in town.
Big whale.
All I did was put his name in real quick to the old engine here. 1995, playing up to 6 blackjack tables at once, wagering $250,000 per hand. He won an estimated between $20 and $40 million during that session.
Changed the bonuses.
Yeah,
MGM.
That's
Sear
right.
Told the story on the air. It's in his book. It's phenomenal. I said Icon because he had a big bet on 49ers money line when they played the Chargers.
Oh, that's
out
right.
Here.
That's right.
That's because it was nothing but Charger money and people coming in from SoCal that even though they were a 18-point favorite, whatever it was
$3 in the money line or something crazy
thing
like that.
All-timer on the money line.
That's right.
You're right. And they blast them in that game. I think he bet 3-something on that I'd have to ask Vinny Meatballs on that one as well. But the Brennan story is incredible. I've never been told. Because if you Google and search any top five Vegas heists all time, that one's on there. Because they never seen or heard from the guy again, and he's even off the FBI list. What happened? But to think, and there's no apps, obviously. Everything's done at the window. It is the sports book at the time. It's a big Monday night football night, September of 1992. He has all the cash at the end of the shift and chips, and he's thinking, I'm good with $300,000 cash. So I think I agree with Robert and other people that this gambler slash shady character he became friends with, where they concocted this idea, he probably did him in and then just took all the money. At the end, because I'm sure he had to have a way to unload those chips too, because he obviously couldn't redeem them.
Okay, what do you think about this theory? Bill Brennan is still alive.
No,
and he has been a VSiN subscriber from day one. He listens and watches the show all the time.
I love the part of the story
from a remote location, parts unknown.
They went to his apartment afterwards, cleaned out, and even the cat was gone. Who goes on the lam with your cat? Are you trying, right? And it's like.
Well, I mean, I would take my dog if I'm on the lam.
That's an easy way to track you down.
Right? I mean,
with them.
Yeah, I respect that, actually. You're okay. Not going to leave the cat in the apartment. Come on, that's cruel.
It's something. He took the cat with him.
Well, how about he left a clue there that...
Changing identities.
The guy was very detailed, so it feels to me like he would leave that on purpose to maybe think that he changed his identity, but maybe he didn't. I don't know. Obviously, I mean, Robert had no clue either. And he had a great line, by the way, during the break. He's like the nicest guy, and he said on the air too, but nicest guy you're ever going to meet. But he said, as the old saying goes, what con man isn't nice?
Right. Quiet guy.
Yeah. How do you like how he's testing surveillance, by the way?
No kidding. Middle finger, whatever. I just cannot believe that happened. That in a Las Vegas casino, an employee walks out the side door.
Right. Here's one too that I thought Robert was working that night, but evidently he was not. We need to bring somebody on. For the audience that is unaware of this game, because I ran this by you, Paulie, when Robert was going to come on the show today, we need to go down memory lane again and talk to somebody about the Wisconsin-UNLV college football game at Sam Boyd Stadium out here in Las Vegas the night the lights went out.
Jay Cornegay would be good on this.
He'd be dynamite on that.
Other people that, would work on the strip during that.
You had this whole city was overtaken by Badger fans.
Right.
And I was at
the
game.
Significant line move.
Yeah, it went from, 3-9 or something like that. And they're killing UNLV, but you have to get past the 55-minute mark of a college game for it to be official at that time. I think that's probably still in the rules, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, lights go out. Well, everybody in the city's on Wisconsin, pounding them. The lights go out at Sam Boyd. Game cannot finish. Immediately, the conspiracies out there were about, there was a big bettor in town who hired somebody to run into a transformer out here and knock the lights out.
Right.
Because he was going to lose so much money on the game.
Yeah.
Or sports books did that.
27-7 Wisconsin, 7 minutes left in the game. The officials had to call it.
That's it. Lights out.
Their initial reports are exactly what you said. A guy hit a transformer near the stadium. Nevada Power later confirmed it was an equipment failure, a bad cable line, and what caused the blackout. The outage lasted roughly half an hour. Power restored at 4 in the morning. Good luck explaining to drunk Wisconsin fans why they couldn't cash their ticket.
Oh, and by the way, I got reports that weekend of several books who were overtaken by Badger fans who traveled here for the game, wild that they couldn't cash their tickets.
Yes. Convinced it was a fix.
Mm-hmm.
Convinced sabotage. Convinced Nevada Power was in on it.
Sure.
Whatever, with the significant line movement.
Yeah.
There was... they had 42,000 there, strong, that made the move here, nothing but Wisconsin money, and that's a refund, sorry.
That was such a massive story out here for a long time that year. Had to be. Longer than a year. Lasted for a long time.
Yes.
Will Wisconsin be a dark horse this year? Well, Phil Steele talked about his for this upcoming season.
I don't think we're going to see a Indiana ever again as far as a team coming from the bottom to the top like that. But I do think Indiana is clearly in the mix. But, if you're looking for teams outside the top 10 that have a shot at winning it all, I'm going to throw two of them at you right now. The first one coming from the Big Ten would be USC. And when I talked to Lincoln Riley going over the roster with him, he feels it's the best defense he's had in his 5 years at USC. Gary Patterson, the defensive coordinator, one of the best defensive minds in football. They have my number 5-rated offensive line. They got Jade Maiva back at quarterback. The running back core is loaded with Wayman Jordan and King Miller both back. Remember, Jordan missed half the year with injury last year. And they get Oregon and Ohio State at home. They were 7-0 at home last year. And keep in mind, had they knocked off Oregon in Autzen Stadium late in the year last year, they would have made the playoff. So keep your eyes on USC as a dark horse. And then another dark horse, at least this year, and it's a surprising name because it's not like an Indiana, but it's Alabama. And I think the way Alabama finished the season last year, getting blown out by Indiana, couldn't run the football in the postseason. They lose Ty Simpson at quarterback. There's no doubt that they were picked sixth in the SEC by the media. But I think when you look at Bama, it's Kalen DeBoer's third year. This guy's an excellent head coach. This guy's got a 20-6 record against ranked teams. I like both Keelan Russell and Austin Mack at quarterback. The defense is loaded. The secondary, one of the best in the country. The defensive line, they added a lot of size up front, so they're going to be tougher against the run, get more pressure on the quarterback. And when you factor in the schedule, I haven't favored in 9 games this year. I have 3 toss-up games, though. Georgia at home. They beat Georgia on the road last year in the regular season. At Tennessee, at LSU. Nobody's talking about Alabama this year, but I think they could surprise.
That's Phil Steele, 2 of his dark horses this year. He was on VSiN by the Books with Jensen and Dave. Bama, dark horse? Do they qualify, in your opinion?
Yeah, they would qualify.
Okay.
I would think at 13.
Well, I think that you're kind of on a dark horse. You had it in the guide, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, Penn State, right?
Playoff, yeah.
Yeah.
To win it all, that's aggressive.
Well, but no, I'm not going to go that far. But
yeah, because the schedule's so easy. And they should go over their win total. And they have. I would much rather have Penn State than USC. And that's schedule related.
No Big question about that.
Big time schedule there.
Yeah, that's imagine if the schedules were flipped.
Yeah, no kidding.
USC would be probably odds on to make the playoff this year.
I also like his playoff pick, which is Navy 8-1, which he gave out too. I think Paul Stone did that.
Yeah, he did. Was on with Paul Surrey. Definitely
so
did.
Out of that group of 6, who's going to get in there? And no one was ranked. No little guy is ranked in the polls.
Yeah.
So a lot of people thinking Boise, even though they're 3 touchdown dogs to Oregon to start, but Navy at 8-1, Phil gave out to make the playoff.
All right. That's a, you know, we've had those. I mean, last year, I mean, those teams that made it, both of them, as the little guy, they were huge numbers at some point, either before the season or during. I had Boise the year that they had Genty to make it, and they were like 7-8-1 to make it that year. And everything was set up for them to be a great team that year, and they were. But
And they did it.
They did. Yeah. But here's the thing, Bama's ranked 13th overall.
Yeah.
I need to go down a little bit more than that. But I guess he's talking about maybe one. JVT hasn't won in the national title. He was the one person in the guide to have that. But
the rushing game was an abomination.
No, it was.
No, there's nothing to speak of.
Hideous.
Hey, one more thing from Robert. How about in 1996, one sports book losing $1.5 million on a fight? How about that? That shows you how the price was on Holyfield.
I am.
Isn't that something? I mean, we were the only game in town then.
That's right.
And to think you lost that much? What that price was on that? But that's he was invincible. He was the baddest man on the planet. Even though he's got one tune-up and he's out of prison.
I know. How would we? That would probably never happen again, right? Well, first of all, are we ever going to have a character like Tyson ever again?
Now, what's happened to the heavyweight division?
It won't happen.
Just come in and knock everyone out within 90 seconds of every fight.
Yep. All right, we're going to grab a bite inside of our pizzeria coming up next. Your long shot bets that could pay off quite handsomely. Plus, we'll go over some legs to consider for cross-sport parlays. NFL divisions this year, tricky.
Service at Mitch and Pauly's?
Uh-uh, I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
Leave us a tip on your way out.
You don't tip.
You don't tip. What do you mean you don't tip?
You don't believe in it.
The guys crack open the jar and see what the listeners have left behind.
So what, no eating now?
It's time for the tip jar at Mitch and Pauly's Pizzeria.
FTM at VSiN.com or tweet at us as well. Tip jar always open. Start off with a banger. This has been all over social media. A guy had to bet $1 to win $203,000. Alvarez MVP, Schlittler Cy Young, McGonigal Rookie of the Year, Mizorowski Cy Young, Weatherholt Rookie of the Year, Otani MVP. How about that the one that could take him out was the shortest shot? Otani minus 140 for MVP. That's the one that could get him potentially. Oh.
So you were on vacation when this one really took off and Samich was in. That's exactly what we said.
Oh, that's wild.
The one, it might have been Dustin. The one that he might lose is actually Otani. That if you go back a month ago or a month and a half, whatever it is, right. Like that's the one lock that he has.
Alvarez was 10-1. Schlittler was 18-1. McGonigal was plus 260. The Miz was 20-1. Weatherholt was plus 650. Come on.
I ran this by our buddy Rich in Canada. Because he responded to it and he goes, I promise you this guy has about 100 tickets because he does the same thing.
Uh-huh.
He puts in like these dollar tickets with different combinations, and then this is the one that's the potential winner.
Yeah.
Maybe that guy has other tickets with PCA. Who knows?
That's true. Okay, could be. Chris in Indiana, 8-teamer. 5 are already in. First 2 were from a UFC card June 14th. He's got Brunson, NBA Finals MVP, and Stahl Conn Smythe. He needs Alvarez, MVP, the Miz Cy Young. It's got Oregon on there to win the college football. No need. Why? Why so much? He might start off 7-for-7, and it comes down to Oregon. I know they're top 5.
Well, that way he'll have the entire football season to root for him.
Oh, he had so many big ones in already,
I can't.
Too.
It's so small. Does it say 25 to win like 40-plus thousand?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
That is excellent, but why the Oregon? Too aggressive. Matt in Boston. Bills, Texans, Eagles, Packers division winners, 24-1.
So when we're done with this, yeah. I want to expand on specifically betting NFL divisions this year.
I can't get there with the Packers. I'll say that.
No, neither can I.
Tom in Pennsylvania. He's cooking with Crisco. 5 of the 7 are in. Sinner to win Wimbledon, Wyndham Clark U.S. Open, England and France to make the World Cup semis. He's got Yankees American League Rams Super Bowl almost 4,500-1. Come on, Tom. Get there. That's excellent. Bad news with Freed, but they can do this. With Judge coming back. Jack in West Virginia. Mbappe Golden Boot winner. Dodgers National League. Patriots AFC do it again 45-1.
One winner.
Not bad.
Dodgers short shot. I can't get there with the Patriots.
Yeah, different. I know. The schedule's tough. Gordon in Oregon. He's got 4 of 5 in. Jags, Pats, Seahawks, division winners. Spurs win the West. Dodgers World Series, 193-1. It comes down to the Dodgers.
Wow. That's a pretty nice ticket to have on the Dodgers now, right? I look at it that way. He now obviously has L.A. at 193-1 to win the World Series.
Uh-huh.
And prediction markets, hello, Circa.
Hello.
Is a spot where you can bet the no throughout the entire year.
Good job, Gordon. I know you email all the time. FTM@VSiN.com. We're rooting for you. Ginger Snap 22 on X. Stribling, most receiving yards. First 3 weeks, 150-1.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier.
Excellent.
That's from Nick. Put me on that as well.
Jimmy Cape Cod. We love you, Nesson. Aces Lynx. Finals exacta.
Okay, I like where his head's at.
Oregon Big Ten. Cowboys have more wins than the Seahawks. 40-1.
Oh, getting very creative there.
That's good.
You can actually include those on cross-sport parlays, huh?
MGM has that. DK has that. I think Caesars has head-to-head, too. I could be wrong.
What do you make of Oregon to win the Big Ten?
Sure, I'm there for it, yeah. Absolutely. I don't have a problem with it. Ohio State schedule's brutal.
It is, yeah.
FTM@VSiN.com or tweet at us as well.
Okay.
Do it every Tuesday.
So let me, and this could be just talking about NFL divisions in general for these parlays, or because I like to parlay, I don't like to do the NBA, but I like to do baseball and I like to do NFL, and not necessarily every year, but when it might make a little bit of sense on a couple of teams, maybe three, whatever, to win their divisions. I got to tell you, Paul, I think the Lynx to win the WNBA titles, but it's like even money. So that would be like one leg. If we were just trying to find one team to tie in to cross-sport parlays this year in the NFL, there isn't one I would bet. There's not a single team that I would bet right now. Right now, maybe during the season, but right now I'd rather bet them straight up.
It's hard to put anything together.
Yes.
Okay, Rams, Bills, then what?
I don't. But do we like the Rams enough to build parlays with them?
I'm there with the Rams. Yes, but. I'd say Rams, Bills to start it. But other than that, I'd say good luck. Maybe
also,
Eagles, but NFC South, no, good luck. AFC South, good luck. AFC West, good luck.
See, yeah. I mean, so with the Bills, last year I said I want to lay games with the Bills in their division. Like, well, I want to, because I think they're going to win it by 1.5, 2. They lost it. Like, I don't trust the Bills to, and I don't even like the Patriots this year. They're like $1.40 to win their division.
I love the Allen quotes. Tightest group I've ever been a part of on a sports team.
Yeah, well.
Everyone's buddy-buddy. And maybe Brady is that key that they need to get them over the top.
I just don't see it.
Probably missed their chance last year, right?
Yep. So, I don't. The Texans at +120?
A lot of love for the Texans. It does make sense, though.
That's the one team I think I could circle.
Here's why it makes sense. Every year, something has gone wrong. It's been catastrophic. Injuries, key guys out, O-line sucks, still make the playoffs.
Right.
What if everyone stays healthy this time and they fix the O-line? That's why it could be maybe a 12-win team.
Sure, and then you're buying on the biggest dip potentially of Stroud's career. Because what if he bounces back a little bit? Just a little.
Yeah.
Right? Because that defense is going to carry the day for sure.
Terrible last year.
Yeah.
It's some horrible games.
No doubt. I think Jacksonville comes back to the pack.
Could be.
And I don't want...
Danny Dimes appears to be ready to go.
But you can have him. I don't want the Colts.
But yeah, all right.
Titans, year, they, 2 years what were away,
they,
whatever.
They were 8-2, though, when he got hurt.
I understand that.
Whatever, great record.
Sure. I can't get there with the Eagles. I think the Cowboys can win that division. Good luck in the, and this is why I'd rather bet him straight. I bet the Lions at +180 to win the North. I'm not going to tie them up with Crusoe. I'd rather just have them straight. Because, honestly, you can make a case for... I can't make a case for the Packers, but you can make a case for the Bears. You can make a case for the Vikings, I think, at that number. Also, the NFC South, you said the Buccaneers. I'll give you the Saints.
That one's tough.
Yes. As is the AFC West.
Mayfield was running his mouth today.
What did he have to say?
We're going
to
shock a lot of people. We've been watching a lot of TV, and no one likes us, and... I'm gonna have a big year, and I'm confident we're gonna have a good year.
Well, what does that mean by shocking a lot of people? Because
I would say double digit wins.
Okay,
winning the division, double digit wins. Yeah. And he plays at a high level, and ticked off with the contract stuff too.
Well, he's certainly. I mean,
I could see it.
He's done this plenty in his career where he can play at a high level. My question is, can he do it for a full year?
Mm-hmm.
Like Baker, Paulie and I pounding our chest last year that you were the MVP at the 7-week mark, 8-week mark, whatever it was. Do it for the full season, man. Put it together. He was playing that well last year, but
I could also see these. That's also an indictment of the rest of the division, though, as well. Like, they're not going to ask much to win. Look what won it last year.
I know.
So
I'll tell you what, maybe building a parlay around teams to finish in last place.
Yeah,
that's where you can get nuts, and that's where I would start building with the Packers. Packers are +350. I bet that straight, and also maybe put them on some parlays. Because I think there's a chance here where you're going to get just bonkers results where you get a couple of those big ones in, and all of a sudden that multiplies like crazy.
I do agree with Paul Allen. Vikings better win that game week one at home. Not going to say must win, but that you got to have that game.
That's
Parsons is out for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You get him at home, all the hype, Kyler Murray coming in.
Sure. You won 9 games last year.
You always beat him when you always did well when it was Favre coming to the Metrodome. You always beat Rodgers when he would come to town. You got to win that game. College football season, 10 days away. Getting the VSiN College Football Betting Guide's a great move, and it's free with VSiN Pro team previews. Humans, Paul Stone, top 10, power ratings. Proven betting systems, and a ton of picks and best bets with win totals and playoff and Heisman as well. And with VSiN Pro, you also get the NFL betting guide and the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide. Every best bet, every host, every guest, the real-time betting splits, and the 24/7 video on the Watch app. Try it today, just $9.99, or lock in a full year and save 50% with the VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now and get it.
Good show today. Got another full hour to go. Charchian was awesome. Robert Walker, great this hour. Again, if you miss any of it, you can always go and get the Follow the Money podcast. Derek Stevens coming up in about 35 minutes. And up next, more NFL. We discussed betting backup quarterbacks to win Offensive Rookie of the Year on yesterday's show, but overlooked one player who fits the mold. Plus, he has this going for him. Details on that coming up next.